Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, August 13th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. As far as me is going, I did go to the APRN at the Second Opinion place, and she amazingly said that she did not think that I needed a spinal fusion if I were to get surgery, that I could have a laminectomy. And she said, we can schedule it right now. You can get more cortisone shots and wait and see how it goes. You don't have to make a decision today. And another option is you can have an appointment with the actual doctor and talk it over with him. So I picked that one. So I'm going to have an appointment with the actual doctor in a couple of days and talk it over with him. And I'm probably going to schedule the laminectomy because the procedure, she told me, is very short. It's an hour if they do one spinal level, and it's an hour and 10 if they do two spinal levels. It is under general anesthesia, and the recovery is a couple of days. That's what I understood. So I'm going to nail the doctor down on those details when I go and in a couple of days to talk to him. So I'll find that out. But it's a much easier surgery. It's a much easier recovery. She said sometimes people only need Tylenol for their pain meds and they don't need a lot of medication. It sounds like a good deal to me. And the people I know who have done laminectomies are very satisfied. And the ones who are cyclists are riding ridiculous amounts of miles. And so I am in a place where I was riding. I did a 20 plus mile ride this past weekend. And then yesterday, I didn't feel so good. I felt like more pinching and tightness and a little bit in the back. I still need to do something about this. I'm nervous to increase my miles, and that's not okay. So if there's something that can make it so that I can get back to riding the way that I want to and doing yoga, and like I would not go on a hike right now. I might go for a short, gentle walk, but I would be afraid to go on a hike. Yesterday, I went on the boat with my friend and his daughter, and that was a very enjoyable day. It was very relaxing, but it was a lot of sitting upright, and that wasn't great for my situation. So I do find that I feel good. I didn't do my PT exercises. I didn't do the whole routine for the last couple of days. Today I finally did them, and I've stayed off the bike yesterday and today. I'm just nervous to get back on the bike because I don't want to go into a flare. And I wouldn't ride tomorrow anyway because it's a work day. And then the following day, I'll see how I feel if I want to go on a short ride. But I'm keeping it short until this gets fixed because I just don't want to have a flare and not be able to walk or work or be in terrible pain. I mean, it's not just about the pain. The pain that I have now is manageable. It's not wonderful, but it is manageable. But what's really bad when it flares and I can't walk and I'm in, and it's unmanageable pain. It's the pain that's so bad that almost nothing touches it. I was talking to a friend yesterday about eating gabapentins, and I haven't taken nerve drugs like that. And I don't take pharmaceuticals. The pain that level I'm in, I'm not taking any pharmaceuticals for it right now. All I'm doing is using topicals and of course stretching and doing PT. So I'm doing topical magnesium. I'm doing topicals that have camphor and capsaicin and menthol in them and other herbs, and herbs with salicylates in them. I do have one camphor menthol cream that has methyl salicylate in it. So I might try some of that. I do have another cream that I bought because my doctor had talked to me about using DMSO topically, and I bought straight up DMSO, and he said to cut it 70% DMSO to 30% water, and I'm afraid to use it because it stinks like onions and garlic, and I'm afraid I'm going to stink like onions and garlic. I'm going to taste the onions and garlic.
Oh, no, anything but that.
Yes, I know. Anyway, so I actually got a cream online that's a DMSO. It has DMSO in it and a lot of other things, and it doesn't stink. I think it's maybe smells a tiny bit of onions and garlic, but it has a lot of lavender in it, has other herbs. I think it has camphor and menthol in it because, you know, camphor and menthol. Camphor and menthol, that cooling is really good. And the other thing that's really good that I hadn't been icing, and last night I did ice, and that was very good. So I'll do some more ice today, and I'll just take it easy until I figure out what's going on. So, anyway, so I'm pleased to have Ron here with me today. Yes. The other thing that's going on, unfortunately, is that, I had a mammogram. Are you going to be okay sitting there?
For a moment, yeah, because you might want me to talk.
I might want you to talk. Yes, I had a mammogram, and I got, the first time in my life, I got the dreaded callback. So some of you women have experienced this, that you've had a mammogram, and they see something on the mammogram, so they invite you back for a second look, and most of you get the second look, and it's nothing. So I'm hoping that is what's going to happen. What I had was a small isodense asymmetry, which means I have tissue that looks different than the tissue on the same spot on the opposite side on the other breast. And so so they have to take another look. So what they do is what's called a spot compression. Now, the thing that's upsetting is that what I read online is generally when this happens, when you get a spot, they reschedule you for the next step in a couple of days so you don't sit and fret. Well, the organization that I went with scheduled me for 2.5 weeks out, which if that's happened to any of you, you know that that's terrible because you're wondering if you have cancer and you have to wait 2.5 weeks to find out if you need a biopsy or what the next step is. So I'm sitting here sweating, and my sister-in-law told me about another organization where you go and they don't let you go until you have an answer. So you go the same day, and if they see something on the initial mammogram, they do further imaging that day. So I may switch to that organization. I'm not going to diss specific organizations, right. But I'm very frustrated
right now. Shop around is what it's called.
Yes, because this is so upsetting because I can tend to be anxious, and this
no made, really
this has made me very anxious. But if you're a woman and this has ever
I
happened
never
to
noticed.
You, if you're a woman and this has ever happened to you, you know how upsetting it is that you get the initial mammogram and they tell you to come back and you have to wait, and it's a cancer screen. It's scary. It's really scary because. Yeah. You know, the big C word is super scary. It affects your whole life. It affects everything that's going on in your life. You know, it can be a life-threatening diagnosis. I mean, the good news is when I looked up small isodense asymmetry, depending on the stat that you're looking at, it's less than 1% of them are malignant.
Right.
And depending on the other stats, depending on age and a bunch of other factors, it's as high as 22 to 25% are malignant, which means I have 75 to 78% that it's nothing.
Yeah.
And the other good news is that there's no breast cancer in my family. Not that you can get breast cancer if you have no breast cancer in your family. My poor sister-in-law was more likely to get breast cancer because she was a DES daughter, which is, that's a whole thing, which I can explain at another time. But it's a drug that they gave to women to prevent miscarriage, and it made you more likely to get certain kinds of cancers, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, and uterine cancer. Mm-hmm. And my other sister-in-law passed from the uterine cancer, and they were DES daughters. And you were, we don't know if you're a DES son, because your mother may not have taken the DES.
We do not. I was not planned, so who knows?
So you may not have been a DES son.
Right.
Right. So, anyway, so... But they could have given it to you because it prevents miscarriages, and it's a possibility. We don't know.
Right.
But so far, so good with you. You're already 70, and you haven't had any reproductive anything. So that's good.
No, and they say that usually it happens with the males. It happens earlier in life.
Right, and it didn't.
And it's testicular.
Right, and you didn't.
Right.
You haven't had any of that. So that's great. And so anyway, so I'm waiting. It's going to be another couple of days. And the organization said I can call. They don't have a waiting list, but they said I can call every day to try to get in sooner. And I've been doing that, and they have not been able to get me in sooner. So we're waiting till, 4 days from now. So and that's it.
You'll make it.
I'll make it, but let's hope that it's good news.
Right.
I did my ColoGuard. That was good news. Now, let me just tell you about ColoGuard. When you do ColoGuard, the nice thing is if you don't have any risk factors for colon cancer, and you're at low risk and you haven't had hemorrhoids, you haven't had blood in your stool, you haven't had anything concerning, there's a 92% success rate of catching stuff with ColoGuard. ColoGuard is so simple because it's just it's a stool test, and they send you a kit. You provide a stool sample, which you send back. You don't have to fast or anything. In fact, if you're planning on doing the stool sample on Sunday, it's a good idea to eat lots of fiber on Saturday. Yeah, so you eat extra. So, but don't eat stuff that constipates you. Eat lots of fiber, eat fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds, beans, whatever, so that you have a decent stool to provide. And then you do your stool sample, and they have all kinds of very easy instructions. It's so impressive. Step-by-step instructions. And they have you do it, and you pack it up, put it in a box, you take it to UPS, and off it goes. And I had my results 5 days later.
Yeah.
So the whole ColoGuard experience, I did the sample on a Sunday, and I had the results on Saturday. So meaning I put the box in, I got shipped on Monday. Probably got shipped on Tuesday because, you know, I went in the afternoon on Monday. So, you know, so they probably received it Tuesday, Wednesday, and a couple days later after they got the box, I had the results. So that's very impressive. So that was much nicer than this mammogram experience. Mm-hmm. So I think it's cruel to have a woman wait over 2 weeks to get the next step when they're worried if they have cancer. When I send my patients for mammograms, the minute I get the results back, I put in to my staff to call them and tell them what the results were. And, you know, generally it's normal, but I have them call right away and tell them. And sometimes if I get the results on a weekend, I'll call and I'll leave a message, or I'll write them an email and tell them their mammogram is normal. If their mammogram has a finding, then I would want to talk to them directly. But generally when it's normal, I call them right away. And to make a woman wait 2.5 weeks is not okay. It's not right. And so I may switch to a different organization so that that doesn't happen again. So that's what's going on with me. Let me see. Yeah, that's basically what's going on. I'm babying my back and my femoral nerve and my spinal stenosis situation. I'm probably going to schedule the laminectomy, and I'm waiting on this mammogram. So the thing is, you hear me talking about this stuff. I didn't talk about stuff like this 10 years ago because I didn't have these problems 10 years ago. Now I'm in my 60s, and it's like, you know, stacking up all your doctor's appointments. It's amazing. And, you know, one of the things that happened was my dental care. I didn't do my dental prophylaxis because it was scheduled for April 30th, and that was 1 week after the horrible flare of the femoral neuralgia. I could barely walk on April 30th. That was amazing because it flared on April 23rd. A week later, I was barely walking. It was not good. I was getting around with a walker, and I was in a lot of pain. So they couldn't reschedule me until September. And that's what happens. When you cancel your dental prophylaxis, they can't rebook you for months. But what are you going to do? I think I have a spot that's not good right now. So that's me. So how about you? What's going on with you?
You know, I'm better. Better.
That's
every
great.
Day. Every day is a little bit better. The end of the day is always hard. But I haven't been using the brace now for a week, which has been
wow.
So I'm about to approach week number 7, actually.
Which
will be tomorrow. Will be week 7 from the time of the surgery.
The surgery. Right.
Right.
7 weeks. That's right.
7 weeks since the surgery. So that's good. And, you know, I'm getting a little bit stronger every day, and I'm doing my PT and doing the basic stuff to try to strengthen around the neck and shoulders, but not too much because they don't want you using excessive weight or anything like that. So it's a process. That's the best way. That's my latest word, is that it's a process.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like this has taken a lot longer than I had anticipated.
Yeah.
Or maybe than I was informed, but maybe I just, you know, I'm impatient, which is
kind of,
you know, I mean,
that's understandable.
Obviously, you know, you want to get back out, ride your bike again, do that. But I'm just really kind of more indoor cycling than outdoor cycling, which is a real shame for this time of year. Because I'd rather be outside. It's,
what we have to count on is, first of all, give it another month. It will there'll still be some good cycling weather. We may have to get back on our bikes when it's cold out. And we'll do some of that. You know, hopefully I'll have my surgery in September. Mm-hmm. And, you know, then and I'll be okay to ride. Hopefully, I mean, I'm hoping it's something like when I had the injection that I can get back to activity like a week later. I don't know. I'll find out what they say. I mean, obviously, I'm not going to, I'm going to do whatever they tell me in terms of timeline. But, you know, this, we have to kind of consider that this summer was a wash.
It's just, no kidding.
It was a health wash. For both of us, you know, between this, both our stenoses, we just, you know, we kind of missed out on the summer that we had to do much more laying around, managing pain, managing health stuff. And that's just the way 2020, and I didn't want 2025 started out good. I was getting stronger. I was riding well. And then, and I had a great ride. I remember that great ride I had on April 19th. And, you know, 4 days later, I was flat on my back. I said, that's it. I do yoga and strength training and core and chiropractic and acupuncture. And this still happens. I have to go to the surgeon. So it's enough already. And that's the way it is. And you have to manage. And we're both managing this while still having jobs. It's not like we're retired.
Except so. I've been out of work for over 6 weeks.
Yes, you have, which is frustrating for you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's what's going on there. He's getting better and better. And he was so bad right after the surgery. He had so much pain, and he couldn't even manage his own meds. And now he's not even taking meds. You're not taking any pharmaceuticals. Well, no. you take the occasional Tylenol.
An occasional Tylenol.
Yeah, but you're not. But it's not like it was. And you take an occasional Methcarbamol.
No.
Right, so you're done with the muscle relaxants, and you're mostly done with the Tylenol. You know, the occasional Tylenol, no big deal, and that's good. And we slather you with like, he doesn't like topical magnesium oil, so we do lotion with Epsom salts. He likes that. So there's magnesium sulfate in Epsom salt lotion. So he likes that. He won't take a bath, so that's not an option. But sometimes you put it on yourself, and sometimes you have me do it.
Yep.
Do you do that every day? Put the lotion every day?
I tend to do it at the end of the day when I'm starting to get real sore.
Yeah.
Because, you know, after what you don't realize is that you, you know, there's a lot of muscular activity to holding your head up.
Yeah.
And you don't realize how much that is until you get to the end of the day and you've had some, you know, severe surgery done on your muscles that are holding your head up. Your traps are the big ones.
Right.
Trapezius, you know, all we see it is this little tiny thing behind our neck, but it actually really extends down low into your back. So there's a lot of trauma that happens from that particular muscle being cut and then restitched.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's
Can you do me a favor and get me some cold water?
Sure.
Thank you. All right. So, all right. So let me see. So we're going to talk about ways to reduce stress, which is what I need. We started on this last week, so I'm going to finish off this series on how to reduce stress. One of the things you can do is practice deep breathing. Studies have associated diaphragmatic breathing with stress reduction. It includes diaphragmatic breathing. You can do alternate nostril breathing, and you can do box breathing. Any kind of deep breathing that you do helps to lower cortisol. It helps you to have more awareness of your breath. It makes it slower and deeper. When you breathe in deeply through your nose, your lungs fully expand and your belly rises, and that helps to slow your heart rate. So the other thing about deep breathing is that when you engage in deep breathing, if you try to do some deep breathing every single day, your overall rise in cortisol will be better. So when you practice deep breathing, you're going to be more likely to be doing deep breathing even when you weren't planning on doing it. So, I mean, I will tend to do anytime I sit down, if I'm sitting down waiting for something, so I'm waiting in a doctor's office or I'm waiting for, you know, them at the deli or whatever, I will engage in, thank you so much, I will engage in some deep breathing. So diaphragmatic breathing is where it's like it says here, you take a deep breath in through your nose. So you keep your mouth closed and take a deep breath in through your nose. So you're really engaging your diaphragm. Diaphragm is a muscle that expands and pushes your abdominal organs out and away so your lungs can inflate. So you engage in that kind of breathing, and then you breathe out slowly. And generally you breathe out more slowly than you breathed in. And that is what helps you to lower cortisol. It helps to relax your breathing muscles, and it helps to relax your blood vessels. All of the things that make you stressed, it tends to calm those down. Alternate nostril breathing. I can show you, if you're watching the video on Facebook Live or on YouTube, I can show it to you. So what you do is you close off one nostril, and you take a deep breath in through the nostril that's unblocked, and you breathe in, and then you block the other nostril and you exhale, and then you breathe in through the open nostril and you close it off and you exhale, and you alternate like that. So you use your thumb to block one nostril and you use your third finger to block the other nostril. So you breathe in with one nostril. So you're exhaling and then inhaling on one side, and then you're exhaling and inhaling on the other side, and you're alternating that way. And it's just a way to be mindful about your breathing. And it's a good idea if you tend to be stuffy, like it's allergy season right now. I have dust allergies. The ragweed is blooming. The grass is out. So if you tend to be a little stuffy, it's a good idea to blow your nose before you do alternate nostril breathing, because you need to rely on both of your nostrils to breathe. And then box breathing. Box breathing is where you're doing equal breaths. Samavritti pranayama. So that's the Sanskrit for mental fluctuations. Mental fluctuations, and pranayama is the movement of breath. So that's where you breathe in four. So box breathing generally is you breathe in for four, hold for four, exhale for four, and breathe out for four, so or hold for four at the other end. So I can demonstrate. Breathe in, one, two, three, four. Hold one, two, three, four. Exhale one, two, three, four. Hold one, two, three, four. So you're breathing in a box. The time is a box. Those are the equal mental fluctuations, the way you're doing Samavritti Pranayama. But if you can also do it where you exhale, for example, for eight, so you could do 4-2-6 breathing, where you breathe in for four, hold for two, exhale for six, breathe in for four, hold for two, exhale for six. Or you can breathe in for four, hold for four, and exhale for eight. Or you can just breathe in for four and exhale for eight. So I find that I like to breathe in and exhale for longer than I have breathed in for, and that works really well for me. So I would prefer the 4-2-6, and I would prefer the 4-4-8 or the 4-8. Yeah, 4-4-8 is nice, because 4-4-8 is you're breathing in for four, you're holding for four, you're exhaling for eight. So that's a nice way to go. So any of those, any deep breathing slows your heart rate, slows your breathing rate, expands your blood vessels, and will lower your blood pressure and helps to relax you. And so if you engage in some deep breathing every day or a couple of times a day, you're generally going to feel calmer. And if you're acutely anxious, it's a way to lower your cortisol in the moment. So definitely if I'm in the waiting room at a doctor's office, I'm engaging in deep breathing. Or if I'm in the exam room and the doctor hasn't come in yet, I'm engaging in deep breathing, so I'm calm by the time they come in. So spending time with a pet is a great way to reduce stress. That should be obvious. When you hang out with the pet, you and the pet make oxytocin, which is the bonding hormone. And when you have oxytocin around, it makes you feel loving and safe and comfortable. And it helps you just generally to feel more positive. So snuggling with a pet, snuggling with anything, actually caring for anything, helps you produce oxytocin. Snuggling with a pet, but petting dogs or cats or iguanas or whatever it is that you may have, helps you to make oxytocin. But you don't have to touch the pet. You can have a pet, I think I talked about this last week, but you don't have to touch the pet to make oxytocin. So people are less stressed when they take care of a snake. Well, but people tend to pick up their snakes. But if you're taking care of an animal that you don't pick up, like a fish, it still reduces stress and it still causes oxytocin and you bond with the pet. The other thing that produces oxytocin is if you snuggle with the stuffed animal won't do it, but if you snuggle with a stuffed animal, that you'll make oxytocin. So if you actively enjoy snuggling with the stuffed animal, if you don't care about it, it won't as much. But snuggling with anything helps you make oxytocin. But snuggling with a friend or your loved ones or holding hands, those all have you make oxytocin. But definitely spending time with your pet, petting them, throwing a ball with them, with the cat, holding up the toys so that they can bat at them. And just being in their presence will help you to make oxytocin and help to reduce your stress. And then, of course, there's lots of supplements that can help you to reduce your stress, help you to feel better. You want to get an idea if you have any nutrient deficiencies, you want to focus on those. If you take vitamin C, these are things that you can also eat in your food, but vitamin C helps you to make adrenal hormones. If you're low in vitamin C, that cold water is very helpful. If you're a person who likes to drink cold things, which I am, drinking cold drinks can help to access your ventral vagus nerve. So that helps to calm you down too. I know that when I drink cold water, it actually helps me to feel calmer. And the other thing it does is if you're feeling lightheaded, you feel lightheaded because you have, you're not getting enough circulation to your brain, that you have too much circulation in the periphery, and so you're wanting to get the circulation into the core of your body, which the brain is part of, and you'll get more circulation in your core and you'll feel less lightheaded when you drink cold water. That's why you're supposed to drink cold water if you're a woman, right after you get exercise, because you tend to feel lightheaded after you get exercise. The cold water will bring the blood flow back to your brain. So, and I have a little autonomic weirdness. So cold water is something that helps me. And so I have cold water on hand now while I'm doing the show. And I keep cold things to drink in the fridge at home and at work. And I always have a drink container with ice if I'm out. So, I have one of those Yetis, one of those insulated drink containers, so I can drink cold water from that. I have water on my desk, but I also have water in the refrigerator that I can drink from. I have drinks in the refrigerator that I can drink from, and that helps my vagus nerve. But anyway, there's loads of supplements that can help to reduce stress. And there are things like that help to manage cortisol. There's stuff with magnolia in it. Magnesium is something that can definitely help you to feel calmer because it helps to regulate your serotonin, which is a neurotransmitter that's related to stress. And mood, to anxiety and depression. And magnesium just helps to calm your nerves and muscles and helps them to work in a more even manner, and helps to regulate your heart rate, helps to regulate your heart rhythm. And lots of people don't get enough magnesium in their diets. Magnesium is in leafy green vegetables. So if you're not eating enough green vegetables, you're probably not getting enough magnesium. And magnesium is the most common one of the most common nutrient deficiencies in the United States, and in general, just because people don't eat their veggies. And I talk to people all the time who they don't get veggies every day. They're just not regularly getting veggies. That they're meat and potatoes people, or they're eating sandwiches and they're not putting vegetables on the sandwiches. They're just generally not getting enough leafy greens. And this time of year, there's such an abundance of greens. And Ron and I eat salads just about every day, unless we're having a stir fry, which is what we had last night, where Ron made a stir fry and it had broccoli in it, and it had bok choy in it, and it had carrots, and it had lion's mane mushroom in it, and of course chicken. So it was great stir fry. So a very healthy stir fry. And I had it over quinoa, and quinoa is going to have some magnesium in it too. And lots of other vitamins and minerals. You're going to get your carotenoids, your beta carotene and lutein and zeaxanthin and other alpha carotene, all your other carotenoids. Those are going to be helpful. B vitamins are very helpful for reducing stress, and you can get tested for your B vitamins and see if there's any you're low in. It's very common for people to be a little insufficient in vitamin B12. I often give people vitamin B12 to take. I take vitamin B12. I don't take it every day because I have a big dose, but I take it 4 to 5 times a week. And that helps to regulate my B12. And I have a very good methylated form of B12 that's very absorbable. And then there are herbs like ashwagandha, which is, we think of that as Indian ginseng. It's something that helps to regulate your adrenal function and helps you to feel calmer. And then there's all the nervines. So nervines are herbs that help to calm, that help to calm your nerves and help your nerves to regulate in a more even fashion. So things like oat straw and lemon balm and linden and passion flower, those are all nervines. And you can take them in varying doses and they help to calm you down. Motherwort is a great one. It's one of my favorites because it calms you down and it also helps to lower blood pressure and regulate heart rhythm. So that's my jam. It's one of my go-tos. And I'm very blessed because one of my staff, Amy, she most years she makes me motherwort tincture because they have wonderful motherwort that grows on the farm where she works. And she will take it and make a whole bunch of tincture for me. And, you know, if I don't, I go through phases where I'm taking it every day and phases where I'm not. So it's lasted me almost a year so far. And I'm taking it right now. I'm taking plenty of it right now because it does, I'm going through some anxiety and stress and I find it really helpful. So there's so many, this says right here, if you supplement with magnesium, it's linked to decreased stress in chronically stressed people. So when you're chronically stressed, it can take a whole toll on your physical and mental health. You can get exercise, practice mindfulness, spend time with a pet, minimize your screen time, get outside more, and just engage in deep breathing. These are all great ways to reduce stress. Of course, talking to a friend, getting counseling, those are also ways you can help to manage your stress. So now let's talk about a fruit. Let's talk about watermelon. So here's why watermelon is good for you. I thought it's that time of year, so we might as well talk about watermelon. I have a watermelon sitting on the counter that I need to cut. It's a great source of antioxidants and nutrients. It helps to support hydration. And I was talking to Kim yesterday, my friend's daughter, and she was saying there's not a lot in it. And I said, yeah, well, there's some good stuff in it. And we'll talk about what the good stuff in it. She says, basically water. Well, it's water, but it's got some other good things in it. So if you think there's not a lot in watermelon, let's talk about what there is in watermelon. It's a centuries old fruit. It's juicy and it's sweet and it's great for quenching thirst. It has bright red flesh and it has little seeds. It has a lot of nutrients and antioxidants like vitamin A and C. So watermelon can help you to stay hydrated. It's important for your body to function properly. You want to regulate your body temperature and have normal organ function and nutrient delivery to your cells. And alertness, all of those rely on adequate hydration. When you eat foods with a higher water content, it can help to give your body the water it needs to function properly. Since watermelon is, she's not wrong about this, watermelon is mostly water. It's a great choice for daily water intake. The water content means the melon has low calorie density, so very few calories for its total weight. When you eat foods with low calorie density, it can help you with weight management and help you to feel full longer. So there's a lot of nutrients and beneficial plant compounds in watermelon. It has potassium, magnesium, vitamins A and C, and it's, as we said, it's relatively low in calories. A whole cup of watermelon only has 46 calories in it. Has some carbs and fiber and a little sugar, some protein and fat, a very tiny amount of fat. It has 5% of the daily value of vitamin A from beta carotene. Has 14% of the daily value of C, and then a little bit of potassium and magnesium. It's a great source of citrulline, which is one of the big reasons you consume watermelon. That's an amino acid that can improve exercise performance. So you can eat watermelon or drink watermelon water, watermelon juice, before you do a workout, and you may have an improved workout. L-citrulline is easily converted by the body to L-arginine, and those are vasodilators. So they'll dilate your blood vessels so that that you have more blood flow, and when you have enhanced circulation, you tend to perform better. It also has a lot of antioxidants like vitamin C. It has carotenoids, has lycopene, and it has curcubitacin E. So the curcubits are melons, and I believe that cucumber is a curcubit. So it's kind of like a melon too. And they're all beneficial for your health. And it's in watermelon, and there's other food sources like cucumbers that have it. They help combat free radicals, which are unstable molecules that can damage your cells if they accumulate in your body. Over time, the damage may lead to conditions like diabetes, heart disease, cancer. Watermelon may have anti-cancer effects. Some of the plant compounds found in watermelon, like lycopene and the curcubitacin E, may have anti-cancer effects. There's mixed studies, but lycopene intake may be associated with a lower risk of some types of cancer, like prostate and colorectal cancers. So lycopene is believed to work by lowering blood levels of insulin-like growth factor. That I didn't know. And that is a hormone that promotes cell division. So if you have less insulin-like growth factor, you're not going to get over-proliferation of cells, which is that's what cancer does. Cancer forms when cell division becomes uncontrollable. So curcubitacin E may inhibit tumor growth by promoting your body's processes of destroying and removing cancer cells. So there needs to be more research, but that's interesting. There's several nutrients in watermelon that can support your heart health. Heart disease is a leading cause of death worldwide. Lifestyle factors like foods you eat can lower your risk of heart attack and stroke by reducing blood pressure and cholesterol. So lycopene, as we talked about, lycopene is this great antioxidant, can help lower cholesterol and blood pressure, both key in cardiovascular health. It also contains citrulline, an amino acid that may increase nitric oxide levels in your body and help your blood vessels expand to lower blood pressure. Other vitamins and minerals in watermelon are magnesium, potassium, vitamins A, B, 6, and C, all of which are healthy and can help your heart and overall health. Watermelon may reduce your inflammation and oxidative stress. Well, if it's going to lower insulin-like growth factor, it's going to reduce inflammation. Inflammation is a key driver of lots of chronic diseases. So the combination of antioxidants, lycopene, and vitamin C may help lower inflammation and oxidative damage. There was a study that noted that watermelon powder given to rats to supplement an unhealthy diet developed less oxidative stress and lower levels of C-reactive protein, which is an inflammatory marker that can be measured in your blood, than those in the control group. There was a study that where they gave 31 people with obesity and high inflammatory markers 500 milligrams of vitamin C twice a day, and that showed a significant decrease in inflammatory markers compared with the control group. As an antioxidant, lycopene can delay the onset and progression of Alzheimer's disease, but there needs to be more research. By the way, the other place that lycopene is abundant is in tomatoes. And in order, so there's decent lycopene available in watermelon, but in tomatoes, the best way to get, so you can get lycopene by eating a fresh tomato. And right now we're in the fresh tomato time of year. Mm-hmm. So that's a wonderful thing. So you're going to get lycopene just by eating a fresh tomato. But the lycopene is liberated and made more bioavailable by cooking. So would you believe one of the best ways to get lycopene is by drinking pasteurized tomato juice? So this time of year, I'd say eat the fresh tomatoes. But when you can't get the fresh tomatoes, get some tomato juice and have a little tomato juice every day, and you're going to get a lot of lycopene that way. You will get tomato juice as well from anything, or lycopene from anything that has cooked tomatoes. So ketchup, believe it or not. And I know ketchup is problematic because of the sugar, but you can get natural sugar ketchup, and you can get ketchup that doesn't have any sugar in it. Those are available. And also tomato sauce, anything with tomato sauce in it. And if you eat pizza, if you eat any foods that have cooked tomatoes in them, once the tomatoes are cooked, the lycopene is more bioavailable. So get your lycopene on, either from watermelon juice, tomatoes, tomato juice, and cooked tomato products. And lycopene it's a great antioxidant, and it's been shown to be helpful for protecting you against inflammation as well as certain kinds of cancers. So there are benefits for bones and joints from watermelon. Watermelon can benefit your bones and joint health because it has beta-cryptoxanthin in it. This I didn't know, which can help to prevent your joints from inflammation. We should be eating more watermelon. Mm. I'm going to go cut that watermelon. We're going to eat it up, and then we're going to get another one.
Okay.
And we're so blessed. We have this fantastic farmer's market in our area, and we have these great farmers, and they're growing watermelon, and watermelon is outstanding. So there's limited research, but it indicates that over time, less inflammation could help protect you from developing conditions like osteoporosis or rheumatoid arthritis. So I didn't realize about the beta-cryptoxanthin. I'm going to have to remember that. Beta-cryptoxanthin helps to protect, that's a joint inflammation supplement. So consuming watermelon can help your joints. Watermelon, lycopene in watermelon, guess what? It's a great antioxidant, can also help to protect you from macular degeneration. So it has benefits for your eyes. Age-related macular degeneration is a common eye problem, can cause blindness in adults. So lycopene's role as an antioxidant, and everybody thinks about blueberries and bilberries. Well, guess what? Lycopene is your friend. And so lycopene can help prevent and inhibit age-related macular degeneration. Though research is limited, there was a study that treated eye cells with lycopene found it decreased the capacity of inflammatory markers to damage cells. Watermelon. Water and melon. Yesterday I had honeydew melon. We went to a supermarket on the way to the boat launch, and we got cut up honeydew. And it was great. It was really good. It was just cut up honeydew in a container. And we ate the whole thing. It was so good. This is that melon time of year. So citrulline can also benefit in that. It can help with muscle soreness. So it can help improve your exercise performance and also reduce muscle soreness. So you know how you get DOMS, delayed onset muscle soreness. Citrulline can help with that. So watermelon water and watermelon itself are superfoods, and they're great for, it's great for athletes. So if you're doing any kind of a race or a tour on your bike or walking or hiking, or running, and they have watermelon, eat the watermelon. It's going to help your performance. It's going to help you feel better in so many ways. And there's multiple ways it's going to help you. There was a review that found that regular intake of citrulline for at least 7 days improved aerobic performance by increasing the body's production of nitric oxide, which helps expand blood vessels so your heart doesn't need to work as hard to pump blood through your body. Some evidence suggests that watermelon itself, not just the citrulline, may aid your body after exercise because there's so many benefits. It's the water, it's the electrolytes, it's the various minerals. It's the fact that you're eating something that has a high water content and it also has a carbohydrate content. So you're going to absorb the water very well. So you're going to hydrate quickly. And then you're going to get the L-citrulline, which is going to relax your blood vessels so that the water gets into your body more readily. And you have the lycopene, which is reducing inflammation. There's a lot of ways that it's benefiting you. Can also aid your skin health. Well, anything that's going to hydrate you is going to give you better skin health. There's vitamins A and C in watermelon. They're good for skin health. Vitamin C, you can eat it. You can also apply it topically. It helps your body make collagen, a protein that keeps your skin supple and your hair strong. The daily moisturizer that I use has vitamin C in it. So it's helping me build collagen in my skin. So vitamin A is also important for healthy skin because it helps you create and repair skin cells. And so there's got to be more studies on that too. Watermelon helps your digestion because it has a lot of water, a little bit of fiber. Those are necessary for healthy digestion. The fiber helps to keep you regular, and water more efficiently moves waste through your digestive tract. So there's a concern. Does watermelon have a lot of sugar? Watermelon does contain natural sugar, though less than other fruits. A medium-sized wedge, so like a sixth of a watermelon, has about 17 grams of, almost 18 grams of total sugars. And that's a healthy fruit for people with diabetes and those monitoring blood sugar levels. Though portion size and how much watermelon you eat are all important to keep in mind. The American Diabetes Association says that you can eat fresh, frozen, or canned fruit without added sugars, and so that's fine for you to eat. Is watermelon a superfood? It is considered a superfood. That's nice, but I'm going to go tell my watermelon that it is a superfood. It'll give it it'll give it a boost. So the term superfood was created for marketing purposes to sell certain healthy foods, and it's generally used for foods that have a lot of nutritional benefit while only having minimal calories. There's no hard or fast rule as to what foods meet that criteria, but they're generally full of vitamins, minerals, and antioxidants, and it certainly applies to watermelon. Can you eat it at night? Well, it's mostly water. It can help hydrate your body. You can eat it before bed. I don't know that it's going to make you go to the bathroom more. I mean, that's something that's going to be based on each person. So watermelon is tasty. It's thirst quenching. It's great in the heat of summer. It can be grown locally here in the Northeast. So you can get it from your local farmer. Has a lot of water content, has lycopene, citrulline, vitamins A and C, and it can even boost heart health, reduce your muscle soreness, and decrease inflammation. So watermelon is good for you. And I thought it would be nice to talk about this lovely fruit this time of year. So that's the watermelon. Now, let's talk about, this is probably going to go into next week too. Why is the Mediterranean diet so healthy? Where do I begin?
That's a good one.
Yeah. So it's the whole Mediterranean diet is just so full of so many healthy foods. Inflammation in small doses is good for your bodies. It helps to fight off foreign invaders like viruses and bacteria. And when it subsides, once the threat is gone, but when inflammation doesn't let up and it's chronic, it can lead to type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, cancer, dementia. A common risk factor for chronic inflammation is a high-fat, high-sugar diet. But eating the right foods each day can help you keep chronic inflammation at bay. And so the foundation of anti-inflammatory eating is eating antioxidant-rich fruits and vegetables, olive oil, whole grains, legumes, lean protein, and food high in omega-3 fats. So the Mediterranean diet emphasizes those foods and is backed by extensive research. So older adults followed this plan for 6 months and they had lower levels of inflammatory markers in their blood. Well, those who followed the usual diet didn't. And that was a nice 2023 study in the journal Nutrients. So you can follow, it's not that hard to follow a Mediterranean style eating plan. And here's some anti-inflammatory foods that you can eat. I don't know if it's entirely true because my patients are not always used to eating a lot of produce. And when they do, I try to encourage them to eat produce, but a lot of people, they'll buy produce, they don't know what to do with it, and they put it away, which is why it's great to get a Mediterranean cookbook. Get a cookbook or get recipes online. Fruit is always a nutritious choice. There's evidence that cherries and berries in particular can lower inflammation. There's an array of plant nutrients like polyphenols and carotenoids. If you eat sweet or tart cherries, they're linked with decreased markers of inflammation in 11 studies. These same compounds in many other berries like cranberries, strawberries, and blueberries have been found to lower the body's inflammatory response. And I really try to eat some berries every day. I don't know if Ron is good about that, but one berry he does get into a lot is cranberries. He eats a lot of dried cranberries in his salad. And I am, most days I have either yogurt, I have non-dairy yogurt, or I have overnight oats and I top it with berries. And I generally have strawberries, blueberries, blackberries, and raspberries all year. And I just get the organic ones and I have them all year. I'll get local ones or ones we picked out back when they're available. But we're winding down on the seasons for that. I think we're going to have a couple more weeks of blueberries depending on who's picking where. But I know that Windsong Farms is closed now. They close for the season. And Raspberry Knoll, there's no more Raspberry Knoll. Raspberry Knoll's done.
Yeah, they're done. They close up shop.
Yeah, both Raspberry Knoll and Windsong Farms. Windsong Farms, I'm sure they'll keep going, but their season is over. You can't go pick blueberries there anymore this year. And Raspberry Knoll's done. They retired. So those are our local. We have a lot of places you can go picking, and we have great farmers markets around, and we're just very fortunate around here. But cherries and berries are really good for you because they're so high in antioxidants. They have polyphenols, anthocyanins, and carotenoids. Like I said, the sweeter tart cherries were linked with decreased markers of inflammation in 11 studies. And other berries like cranberries, strawberries, and blueberries are found to lower the body's inflammatory response. And you can get frozen organic berries for not too much and add them to your morning oatmeal or defrost them and mix with plain yogurt. Or you can put them into a smoothie. It's really easy to get berries into your diet and get them all year round. If you don't want to buy fresh berries that have been shipped from South America, you can get frozen ones that are local and, you know, just use them in something cooked. So you can make a cobbler or a crumble with it, or you can put it into your oatmeal, or you can, you know, you can put it onto yogurt, you can put it into your any kind of hot cereal. And they go in salads too. You can have a sweet based salad. If you have a salad with a crumble of sweeter cheese like goat cheese or feta on it, and you can put berries into the salad and then use balsamic vinegar and oil. Balsamic vinegar tends to be a little bit sweet, so you can have a sweet profile on a green salad that has a lot of your regular salad vegetables, and you can put berries in it. And Ron, like I said, Ron puts cranberries in his salad. I tend not to because I want my salad to be more savory, but I get my berries at other times of day. So dark green leafy vegetables are good for you. How long have you been listening to Radio Naturopath? Greens and beans are good for you, right? So if you want to get something really good for you, eat a leaf. Leafy greens are really good for you. They can lower inflammation by increasing your antioxidant levels. So there's a nutritionist who said this in a study. They looked at the benefits of vegetables. Antioxidants help balance unstable molecules that can damage your body's tissues. And the decreased stress on the body leads to lower inflammation. In a study by Dunave, if you eat 2.5 cups of dark leafy green vegetables a day, it helps slash levels of C-reactive protein by 66% in about 6 months. So eat your greens. Beans and legumes like chickpeas and lentils offer lots of healthy protein. Their fiber and antioxidant compounds are known for helping to prevent inflammation. To get more, you can blend a cup of baby spinach into a morning smoothie, eat a kale salad with lunch, and have bok choy in your stir-fry dinner, which we did last night. For beans and legumes, you can heat up a bowl of lentil or black bean soup, or blend white beans with olive oil, lemon juice, and garlic for a dip. Olive oil is really good for you. Extra virgin olive oil contains a bunch of several plant compounds that have anti-inflammatory effects. So oleocanthal targets the same pathways as the pain reliever ibuprofen. Who knew we should be eating our olive oil? And if you like olives, you should eat olives too.
We eat a lot of olive oil.
We're always dumping it out and getting more. Targets the same pathways as the pain reliever ibuprofen. Who knew? That's your COX and LOX, your cyclooxygenase and your lipoxygenase. So when you taste an olive oil that contains the compound, you'll feel a bitter spiciness in your throat when you swallow it. So to get more, some of the olive oil you eat should be uncooked. Cooking olive oil with low levels of oleocanthal can further reduce the levels. So add uncooked oil to salad dressing or drizzle it on grilled fish or steamed vegetables. So that's interesting. You're going to get, right, we do that with our salads. In the Mediterranean eating plan, you eat fermented foods like yogurt and kefir. They can reduce inflammation by improving the diversity of your gut bacteria and activity as well. There was a study in the journal Cell that found that blood levels of 19 inflammatory proteins decreased significantly in healthy adults who consumed a lot of fermented foods. They ate an average of 6 servings a day for 10 weeks. Whoa, I don't think I do that. I mean, I have some yogurt. I don't have yogurt every day. And I got some kimchi, but I'm not having that all the time. But I do take probiotics. Those who were asked to eat a high-fiber diet didn't have the same degree in inflammatory protein. So eating fermented foods is good for you. I also take natto, but I take it in a pill. I don't eat the food. So, boy, this makes me think about should be eating more fermented foods. Have yogurt, kefir, or cottage cheese that's labeled cultured or probiotic at breakfast. Sauerkraut or other pickled vegetables. Look for jars labeled fermented or raw in a store's refrigerated section with lunch or dinner. So you want like raw sauerkraut is something you can get. If you go, your supermarket or your health food store is probably going to have a fermented food section. We have a great one at the Willimantic Food Co-op. And you can get kefir. Well, kefir is not in the fermented food section. It's in the fermented drink section. Well, it's in, you know, by the yogurt and the dairy. So you can get kefir there, but they have a whole section of fermented vegetables. So there's fermented beets. There's fermented greens. There's kimchi and several kinds of kimchi. There's spicier kimchi, less spicier kimchi, and there's raw sauerkraut. So the sauerkraut has not been pasteurized, so it's still got active cultures in it. There's a carrot hijiki or fermented carrot ginger that you can get. And there's real fermented pickles that have not been pasteurized. Just pickled cucumbers. If you buy them off the shelf and they're not in the refrigerator, they are probably pasteurized. So if you're going to buy pickles, you probably want to get some that have not been pasteurized and that you have to buy from the refrigerated section. So there's a few brands of those you can get in the supermarket, and you can certainly get them in the health food store. Tomato sauce. We talked about tomato sauce when we were talking about watermelon. That when you eat tomatoes and tomato products, they help lower inflammation. There were 22 healthy men that got a serving of sofrito, which is a type of tomato-based sauce. Their levels of two important markers of inflammation dropped, and this was in a Spanish study in the journal Nutrients. Lycopene, hello, is one of the main anti-inflammatory compounds in tomatoes, and cooked tomato foods, what I said, are typically have the most concentrated lycopene. Some other tomato sauces, sofrito, has onions, garlic, and olive oil, which are also anti-inflammatory. Yippee. So that's really good. Some people with arthritis may avoid eating tomatoes and other nightshade vegetables like potatoes and eggplant, thinking that they trigger inflammation and joint pain, but there's no research showing that nightshades cause inflammation. Indeed, plant nutrients in tomatoes and other nightshade vegetables are strongly anti-inflammatory. So as far as that goes, I mean, some people avoid nightshades because of that. One place that came from was Mikio Kushi, was the guy who developed the that diet. Anyway, he developed a diet that encouraged you to avoid eating nightshades because they were inflammatory. All the solanine was supposedly inflammatory. And I remember when I was studying naturopathic college, my blessed memory, Steve Austin, he had the name first, who was my nutrition professor. He said that it's rare for people to actually have a problem with solanaceae. If you eat solanaceae, meaning the nightshade family, that's your tomatoes, potatoes, maca, eggplant, and peppers, if you eat them and you don't feel good, if you have a symptom, then don't eat them. You might have a food intolerance that may or may not be related to the solanine, but you don't necessarily have to stop eating them. So you don't have to stop eating them if you don't have that going on. If you know you don't feel good if you eat those things, then don't eat them. Then you have some kind of intolerance. But if you feel good when you eat things in the nightshade family, then keep eating them. They have wonderful antioxidant and healthful properties to them, and they're part of what makes the Mediterranean diet so good. And I said it, I'm not going to have enough time to finish this. It's time to wrap up. So we will get back to this last week, in which we will talk about other parts of the Mediterranean diet and why it's so good for you. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, MD, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org.